Good evening, everybody. This is Thomas Rickert. I'm one of the co-chairs of the CCWG. And in terms of roll call, as usual, we take note of those who are present in the Adobe Connect. And let me ask you whether there are additional participants of this call that are just on the audio bridge so that we can add your name to the list of attendees. There doesn't seem to be anybody only on audio. Let me also ask you whether there are any updates to statements of interest. I don't see anything in the chat, nor do I hear anything on the audio. And just as a heads up, there is a substantial number of colleagues in this group who haven't yet submitted their SOI, and we've reached out to those yesterday after ICANN staff has done so a couple of times, so we would really like to encourage you to show your own accountability to the community by just stating your interest. It's no issue whatsoever to have an interest. It just needs to be transparent what interests you are representing. So thank you so much, and with that, I think we can move to the second agenda item, which are the activity reports from the various sub-teams. And I'd like to hand it over to Jordan for a quick update on work party one.
Thank you, Thomas. Can you hear me?
We can hear you all right.
Fantastic. Thank you. I sent a structure of this report to you all on the email loop about 20 minutes ago. So in the head of the game, usually I've just been relying on verbal stuff. Attached to that email is a PDF of the current work status. I don't know if our staff team, oh, there we go, it appears to be appearing in front of us, which is good. But the basic lesson of this chart and what I wanted to draw your attention to is that we're making quite good progress on the elements that we've got in our chart. It's still loading, isn't it? So I'll do the other bits of this update just before it appears. And Alice has clicked the link through on the chat channel. The process stuff I wanted to update was to give you that update and to just let you know that on working party meeting 1, number 4, which is happening on Thursday, it's my intention that we will get through all of our other work items for at least a first discussion, and we will be talking about how we arrive at consensus on forwarding documents formally for the whole CCWG to consider at Istanbul. And then we'll have another consensus call agreement meeting, hopefully next week at our usual time, and then send the documents through on the deadline for consideration in Istanbul. In terms of the current substance, and I'll wait until Alice has got that document done. What I was hoping we could discuss in substance tonight is just the discussion of where the GAC has got to in considering the interaction between the GAC operating principles and the ICANN bylaws. And so if I could ask Matthew to give us a quick update on that, because he was writing as a co-chair on behalf of the CCWG to the GAC chair to discuss this. That's one item of substance. And I just wanted to have a brief discussion about whether we're trying to fill out lots of options for mechanisms for discussion in Istanbul, or whether we want to consolidate our thinking and party around one or two of these. And there's not as much as we might hope for because of the sequencing of these meetings. We've got a meeting coming up this Thursday, which will give us lots to discuss next week. But just the sequencing is wrong for too much content for us this week. So I apologize for that. While that document is loading, Matthew, would you like to to give us an update on where the discussion with the GAC has got to?
Sure, Jordan, thanks. So you will remember there were exchanges about engaging directly with the chair of the GAC to discuss how to further proceed regarding the question that was raised initially through a stress test analysis and then handed over to Work Party 1 about decision-making rules for GAC advice to be given preparation. I don't remember the exact word, the deference that the bylaws state for public policy advice by the GAC. As in the name of the co-chairs, we have engaged with Thomas Schneider, and we are currently in the process of finding a quick slot to give more explanations about the request and have an initial discussion about how to proceed with Thomas. That should happen pretty soon, I hope. And as soon as it has happened, they will certainly report back to our CCWG that I can put out as one of my action items out of this call. And I think that's the status of play, Jordan.
Okay, thank you, Matthew. We just had a note from Jorg in the chat about the chair having sent a preliminary answer to you. Do you think it would be useful to share that with the working party, or just not? Do you want to proceed along the lines you've suggested?
I'd rather have the initial discussion and then share the whole package. My impression is that engaging with them is about finding a way to actually address those questions. And I think given the high load of important work we have on our plate right now within the working parties, I would rather we focus our work on those working parties at some point and not get distracted by the other discussions. But it's open for discussion, obviously.
Okay. My working party hasn't discussed that yet, so I don't have I can't report as rapporteur on a view of the working party. On first blush, it seems to me, given the amount of other work we have to do, that approach you suggested sounds fine.
This is Thomas. For your information, I'm quite confident that we will find a time slot with Thomas either today or tomorrow to further discuss this so that we can report back to the group very shortly.
Okay. On that kind of time frame, I'm happy with that. Obviously, this is all for discussion if people want to, and I'm not going to run that discussion. It's up to Thomas as the co-chair of this meeting to do so. If I may, I'd like to just look at this work status chart that we've got in the window. On the first piece in front of you, hopefully you can have scroll control. There are a lot of green bits, and those are bits that have been discussed a couple of times at the working party, and we'll either be able to sign them off ready to send to the CCWG for consideration at our meeting on Wednesday, or we'll have to take another meeting on consensus calls, as I've already discussed. As you scroll down to the second page, there are some orange and red ones. The orange ones, I've asked for us to discuss all of those at our WP1 meeting number 4 this week, and I'm aware of drafting and other consideration either having been done or being done on almost all of them. I don't know if Keith Drazak is on this call. He isn't, that I can see. I'm still just willing to touch base with him about 5B, 1 and 2. There were no substantive items transferred to us from Party 2. that working party two did confirm that they will not be doing any work on the last table on the third, what was it, the fourth page of this paper in front of you. So the structures that might exercise these powers, whether it's permanent CCWG, delegates, members, supervisory board, and so on, that to be happening. We hope to do that this week. So that's about all I've got in terms of status. If you want to discuss some points of substance, there is, with the one we've just had on the GAC stuff, Steve Talbianco is available to update the one other piece of content I forgot, which we have discussed at Working Party 1, which relates to the other three affirmation of commitment reviews and how to include them in the bylaws. So that's a thing that we could take 10 minutes on if you like. Thomas, that's all in your hands. And after the Working Party 2 report, there's just a reconciliation item that Matthew's going to mention as well. So that's all I have at this point, and would welcome any questions or comments or whatever you'd like me to do, Thomas. I'll be on the line.
But I'm a little bit confused, because I would be very surprised if there was not noise from my line, because there's deafening silence where I am. but by all means, why don't we continue with the discussion on the ASC point? But before we do so, I'd like to give the opportunity to Kavus, who obviously has issues raising his hand, to speak. Kavus.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I think there's some sort of background or some...
There really is.
Kavus,
yeah.
Your line is extremely bad. We have a very nasty echo on your line.
Star 6. Where is Star 6?
Kavus, can I suggest that maybe you try to dial in again, and then we put you back in the line, because you're fairly understandable.
Is it okay now?
So let's go back to the discussion and then put Kavus back in the line once he has rejoined with hopefully better audio. So Jordan and Steve, why don't we discuss the AOC question?
I'll hand over to Steve. Fire away.
Thank you. It's Steve Delbianco with the CSG. Alice has just loaded into the Adobe room the updated document that Work Party 1 discussed last week, where we finished out drafts of the four affirmation of commitments reviews as bylaws-based reviews. On this CCWG group, we have already covered the first two of those reviews, the one on security, stability, and resiliency, and on the ATRT, Accountability Transparency Review Team. If you scroll to the final two pages of the document that Alice has sent, you'll see the final two affirmation reviews. One is on promoting consumer trust, competition, and choice in new GTLDs, and the other is reviewing the effectiveness of who is policy.
Yes.
So if I have it right, Jordan, would you want to briefly run through these two affirmation reviews now that Work Party 1 has already discussed them?
Let's just do that, please.
Okay, now.
Great. So, folks, you should be on page 6 of 7 in the document that Alice loaded. Thank you, Alice. This particular review in the affirmation of commitments was put together in 2009, prior to the start of the new GTLD round. This review committed ICANN that it said that if and when it expanded the new GTLDs, there'd be commitments on addressing competition, consumer protection, security, stability, resiliency, malicious abuse, and so on. And all of that is phrased in the very top paragraph. And what the affirmation required was a review 1 year after new gTLDs had been in the root, another review a year later, and then subsequent reviews no less frequently than every 3 years. So our work party one looked at that schedule and tried to rationalize it and make it general so that it would apply to any subsequent new round of expansion of gTLDs. So what we've retained in here was the affirmation's requirement that one occur 1 year after new gTLDs have been in operation, and then you'll see the periodic reviews no less frequently than every 4 years, measured from the date the board got the final report. So, of course, that timing is completely open to discussion, but much of the text in here came directly from the affirmation of commitments, including the notion of reviewing two things, reviewing the application and evaluation process, that's letter A, as well as the safeguards that were put in place to mitigate issues involved. Work Party 1 repeated the modification to the affirmation whereby the review team was designated by community, not by the chair of the GAC and chair of the board. So each relevant advisory committee, including the GAC, each of the SOs and SGs, would designate people to be on the review team. We said the review team could ask for independent advice, but could choose whether or not to accept the advice. And in the fourth paragraph, we suggested that the review team should have access to relevant internal documents at ICANN, and that we would not disclose them under legitimate duty of confidence. We've repeated the affirmation's requirement that they would be published for public comment. There was quite a bit of debate in Work Party 1 about whether the board shall take action, what the affirmation says today, after 6 months. And our group came up with a different phrase to say the board shall consider approval and begin implementation within 6 months of receipt of the recommendations. So again, the affirmation said the board shall take action within 6 months. We thought that was, well, it was relatively uncertain what take action means. So we said two things, consider approval of the recommendations and begin implementation. That leaves open the opportunity that if the board decided not to approve one or several of the recommendations, that it would not have to implement them. But that brings us to mind a number of other community empowerment tools whereby the community with the supermajority could force the board to adopt recommendations that could challenge the board's decision not to accept the recommendations, et cetera. Now, Cavus, I know you're on the line. He had proposed adding that subsequent rounds of new GTLD shouldn't be opened until the recommendations of the previous review were implemented. And so I have that in yellow on the text in front of you. Jordan and Thomas, I could stop there and take a cue or go quickly to the final affirmation review.
I would suggest that since you've mentioned Cavus, that we give the opportunity to Cavus and others to comment, give some instant feedback, and then move to the next point. So, Cavus.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning again.
Yeah, my previous question was that Thomas replied to Matthew in relation with the text that he sent about increasing the threshold or decreasing the threshold, which may increase the influence of the government to the ICANN or vice versa. And that was some clarification. I don't know whether Matthew or someone has replied to that. And I asked whether Thomas Schneider is on the line to further explain about what he said. This is in continuation of what I said before. He put my wording in a better language, more explanatory and more comprehensive. This is the first one. The second question is that the start of new GTLD was subject to a heated debate at the GAC that it is not only 10 years or X years of time, it is also to take into account of the experience, problems, difficulties gained or learned from the previous round. So this is something that was under the discussion at GAC, and we need to see what will happen. So, and then situation of changing from the decisions, following the decision to majority, simple majority. These are the things still I don't understand. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavuz. With respect to the first point, we already mentioned that we have reached out to Thomas Schneider, and we will update the whole group on the status after we did so. So that's work in progress. With respect to the second point, I think that's something that the group should discuss. We've heard from Steve your point, as well as the suggestion that is made in square brackets. So can we get more feedback from the group on that point, please? Mathieu.
Thank you, Thomas. This is just a personal comment. It seems that the writing of this section is currently based on the assumption that there will be successive rounds of applications for GTLDs. And it's my understanding there might be another option where we wouldn't have any rounds, but an ongoing flow of applications at some point in the future. So I just wanted to stress that, because that might create some inconsistencies or undue constraints on the future. And I think what matters here in terms of competition, consumer trust, and consumer choice is that there is a regular review. It doesn't necessarily have to be connected to specific rounds, except the first one, obviously, for the next 10 to 20 years. So that would be my personal comment on this specific section. Thank you.
Matthew,
sorry, I was on mute.
Go ahead.
Jordan, you're next, please. Go ahead.
I think my point has largely been made by Matthew, which is I looked at the suggestion by Kavuz and wondered whether it we have had eight rounds, and if the question we're being asked to do, whether we have to have this review needs to be done after the current round and before any subsequent round is opened, then are we interfering in another process? That's my question. And I have stayed as far away as I can from the new GTLD program, so I definitely don't know the answer. I wouldn't like us to try and use this accountability work in Workstream 1 that was part of the IANA stewardship transition to force a decision on ICANN about the nature of a round-based or otherwise system and whether any further rounds or non-rounds can happen before this review has been done. That's all. This is an area I don't know much about.
Thank you, Jordan. And I would also like to offer some personal thoughts on this. I think that what we're trying to do here is perpetuate the AOC requirements in the bylaws. So I think in terms of drafting techniques, it would be an inconsistency to make something work for the years to come, but then yet highlight one specific event in there. So I think that might not be the best way to implement it. I think the idea is that the outcome of reviews need to be analyzed by the ICANN board and taken into consideration for next steps, which would be applicable to all sorts of reviews. And maybe we better place this request or reminder to the ICANN board in a section that speaks to exactly those periodic reviews. Any further comments from the group? Kavuz, please.
Yes, sorry to come back again. All these issues that we are discussing are not directly related to the transition September 15 or whatever day. This is the overall accountability. And I suggest that the pre-final draft, whatever, should go to the full GAC physical meeting, and we have to discuss that. It is very, very critical. I don't see it is appropriate to put something before the GAC people. They have the opportunity. They are, may not be as active as ICT or as CCWG, having so many conference calls and so on. So it must go to the physical meeting, the pre-draft, but not the final draft. The pre-draft should go to the meeting about the consensus, about the threshold, about the new detailed rounds and so on. So I would suggest that Thomas Schneider and other people and other five GAC members are member of CCWG, if they are there at this meeting, they can kindly listen to that. We need to discuss it at length. So we have to put all the elements together, not to forget, not to have any unintended consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Kavuz. Aubrey?
Yeah, hi, this is Aubrey speaking. I have sympathy for the conundrum that Jordan was mentioning and wanting to avoid having one of these, the accountability being a forcing function on the scheduling of others. And I'm wondering whether there isn't sufficient wording in sort of an insistence that the currently required AOC review be undergone according to, you know, its established requirements, as it were, which do include for a future round, but we don't have to say that. And then to A, set up the periodic, and B, to indicate that, you know, future accountability requirements for this review could come out of, you know, the upcoming review. And so basically this group enforces the accountability and the response to the statements that came out of an accountability review without presaging what those need to be. So I'm wondering whether there isn't a way to word this that doesn't try to determine future rounds and their scheduling and leaves that up to these committees, but requires, A, that this first one happen, you know, as instructed in the AOC, and then be ways to continue. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. And what I take away from this discussion is that Jordan's group will likely analyze this discussion while proceeding with their work. What I've also heard is that even you, Kavuz, who's asked for that change, mentioned or tagged this as an overall accountability question. So I have not seen a request or heard a request to embed this specific point in our works for work stream number one. And if there is objection to that notion, I think those who think we need to cover this in work stream one should please speak up. But in the absence of such opposition, I would suggest that we keep it on the radar in our discussions, but put it in the bucket for work stream number two. And thirdly, a final remark on the concrete drafting. I think this group does an excellent job in teasing out the points that we need to put into our recommendations. As far as concrete wording for the AOC or for the bylaw changes are concerned, I would suggest that we don't spend too much energy on that, because I think that's something that the legal experts will need to review anyway. And so I think we should rather come up with the general ideas, and that the implementation work done by experts not spend time or energy on that. Sebastian is in the queue. Sebastian, the floor is yours.
Hello. I have 2 points. The first one is that we talked about the review of the WIS. It was a right topic at the last review, but I am not sure that in the future it will stay and the name will stay. And as there is a work on the vector services, it may be useful to expand the discussion not to stick on this wording of on wood. My second point is that review teams are created with a two-step process. And it's a pity that we lost this two-step process. So currently, the community selects a list of people, and the two, the chair of the and the chair of the GAC, or the CEO and the chair of the GAC, make the final selection. And one reason why I think this type of second step is very useful is to have a more balanced selection, because if each group selects people, we don't know if we will have a gender balance, we will have a regional balance, if we will have balances all around. And we need to try to keep this second process. I don't care if it's the chair of the board or the CEO or the chair of the GAC doing that or somebody else, but I think it's important to have somebody doing this. And I can tell you not now because we have no time, how we have done for the meeting strategy working group to try to end up with as much balance as possible. And we quite went to a good mix of balance.
Yes, I am muting my microphone.
Sebastian, had you finished at the end of your intervention? There was crosstalk, so maybe you can repeat the last.
Yeah, but my end was to say I am done. Thank you, and I am ready to participate in discussion on this subject if it's useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Would you, Jordan or Steve, like to respond to that intervention? Or shall we leave it there and you take it back to the group?
I don't have anything to say. It's Jordan here. Steve?
No.
Okay, so I suggest that that we take good note of your request, particularly with respect to a balanced composition. Before we move to work party number two, Jordan, are there any final remarks or points that you would like to see covered in this call?
No, I'm okay with where we're at.
Okay, thank you, and thanks to you and all your team for a great update. And as you said, there's much more to come during this week, so we will have a lot of substance to discuss during next week's call. Thank you so much. As far as work party number two is concerned, I'd like to give the floor to Becky to give us an update.
Thank you very much. We have gotten all of the work streams organized and kicked off the discussion on them. The independent review work item group is particularly active. Robin has kicked off the reconsideration, and there's a lively discussion in that group. We will be planning to have a completed draft of the compact and mission statement in advance, on the 20th for discussion in detail in Istanbul, as well as reports and updates from the various groups. It looks like the independent review project may be a little bit farther along than the others by that point.
Thank you. Any questions for Becky? Kabuz.
Yes, I'm sorry, I was not in the last conference call of Becky. I was sick. Is the issue of binding or non-binding of the review committee conclusion or finding is discussed or not? Thank you.
It is definitely not concluded. It is a part of the ongoing discussion. And as I said, that there will be this is one item on which I think we will need to have legal input. So I'm pleased that the legal team has been identified now, and we can begin to sort of probe on those issues. As I said, based on everything I've heard, there is pretty strong support for making it binding, although even so, there are some hard questions about what that means. I mean, binding in what way? Would it be binding in the sense that it sends the decision back to the board and says what you have done is in conflict with your mission and compact and your bylaws, try again, or something more prescriptive than that. And I think those are important questions that we will need to talk about in the context of the legal advice that we get.
Thanks, Becky. This is Thomas. I note Steve has reminded me kindly that we also have the who is review prepared. So as time permits, we will go back to that point. Becky, there's a question from Jorge in the chat. What is the legal nature of this compact mission? Will it be binding, actionable?
I believe that the goal of the compact and mission would be to establish a standard for what kinds of actions are within ICANN's remit, so that you could understand whether ICANN is staying within its scope or whether its action is outside of the scope. So that's one question that would be very relevant in any of the review and redress mechanisms. Would be, the threshold question, is the action taken within ICANN's mission statement? And then the second question was, in carrying out, if it is within ICANN's mission statement, in carrying it out, has ICANN conducted its activities in accordance with its commitments to the community to respect the multi-stakeholder model and to comply with transparency standards and, to avoid discriminatory treatment and to reflect diversity, et cetera. So it is a standard against which ICANN's behavior would be measured both substantively and procedurally. I think it's in the nature of what some people have called a golden bylaw, meaning that, there are some parts of it that could not be changed, or at least could not be changed without certain safeguards being occurring. So, some significant threshold of board approval plus, community approval or any number of mechanisms. So the question of how it would be binding and enforced is very much a question for the group itself. But I think the most sort of common conception of this is that it would be either not permitted or require a much higher showing of consensus to change something And based on everything I've heard, the notion that ICANN could expand its mission statement would be something that people are very skeptical about.
Thanks, Becky. And I think that getting back to the core components of accountability mechanisms that we've discussed in Singapore, this compact could actually be the test whether, let's say, for spilling the board or other actions, whether there's sufficient ground, and that would be present if there's a violation of that compact. That's certainly further or will require further discussion by your group. Actually, I do have one question for you, Becky, if I may, and that is picking up on a reminder that was sent by Bruce to the list setting out the mission both in the bylaws as well as in the Articles of Association. So has there been any thinking about where to best place this?
I have just forwarded that specifically to the email list for the compact and mission statement. I had not gone back to look at that specific provision in the Articles of Incorporation, and I think it's important that we need to factor that into the process. So it is now in the mix.
Great. And before we move to the queue, let me just pick up on what's been discussed in the chat now, i.e. Jorge's analogy to the compact being something like the constitutional level with the fundamental rules, and I guess that's exactly the line of our thinking, to basically have the fundamental principles laid out there, either in the bylaws and or in the Articles of Association, to have something that violations can be tested against, but also as a guiding principle for whatever ICANN policies developed or board decisions are made. Kabul.
Right.
Kabut, you're next on the line.
Yes. My question to Becky was that if a review is made and a decision is made is binding, what would happen to an appeal to that decision? Is it something could modify that binding to be non-binding if someone appealed to a decision, or what was the relation between the appeal board and the relation between the review team? Thank you.
That's a very good question. I think that the GAC advice is GAC advice, and there's nothing that would necessarily change GAC advice. If, for example, somebody appealed ICANN's deference to GAC advice on the grounds that the GAC advice violated the bylaws or the compact, the constitution, however it is, then I think that one of the things we need to think through is how that would be filtered through, what opportunities the GAC would have to respond, for example. But I think that the general notion in the straw man proposals is that that the ICANN would defer to GAC advice, would duly consider GAC advice, which is the language in the current bylaws, to the extent that advice was consistent with the compact.
Thank you.
Mathieu?
Yes, thank you, Thomas. Thanks, Becky. I think it's an important step forward to have this written down. At the same time, we know if it's a sort of a constitution, we need to be very, very careful before we amend anything, because it will have a tremendous impact all across ICANN at some point. So my question actually, Becky, is about how you came into the proposition of the compact you're circulating on Work Party 2, and what were the inputs you were using? How did you actually pick the items that you are suggesting now? And I think that's going to be an important aspect to inform the ASO and ACs, because I expect a lot of discussions around this. And so we certainly need to be focused on aspects that obviously generate consensus. But I think if you could expand a little bit about how you proceeded to get to that straw man, it would certainly at least be helpful for me.
Certainly. A significant part of the document already exists in the mission statement and core values in the current bylaws. There is also a provision in Article, in Section 3 of the bylaws that lays down an overarching requirement that I cannot single out any individual or entity for disparate treatment absent compelling good cause. And so that was added. There have been a significant number of comments on the public list about public interest obligations. So that was reflected there. There were also comments about institutional excellence and sort of competent and operational excellence. So I tried to capture that. So basically, what I tried to do is, capture all of the discussions that have come up, partly, starting with what's in the bylaws right now and the affirmation of the commitments in terms of general principles, and also using Steve Del Bianco's and his group's inventory of suggestions. I did not include various suggestions about giving ICANN a human rights mission. That was clearly something that some people had raised. It was my sense from our discussion in Frankfurt that clearly, ICANN had to, is not in the business of content. That's something that's quite clearly there. But giving ICANN a sort of more general promotion of human rights was problematic for a variety of reasons, and so a better way to get at what people seemed to be concerned about was to define the mission clearly, and so that expression and those kinds of things would be reflected, concern for expression and the like would be reflected in the limitations on what ICANN could actually do.
Thanks, Becky. So I see no further hands, but what I would suggest for everybody to note as an action item is actually to review the document that you currently see in the Adobe room between this call and next week's call. We will surely get an update to this and we will put this again on the agenda for next week's call. But since this this compact is of such great importance, we really must make sure that we're fully aligned on what's in there. So please take a look at it. Please socialize with your respective groups if you are acting on behalf of a wider audience, so that we can hopefully bring this discussion to a consensus in the very near future, and not experience any surprises in the very last minute. So, again, please take a look at that. We'll get back to it during next week's call. We have not discussed the WHO's review, which Steve mentioned, and Alice maybe can bring back the other document while I give the opportunity to Becky to make some final remarks, if any.
No, I think that's it. I think our groups are often doing good work, and I know that Chris is on this call, and I was going to reach out to him in particular on the ombuds function. I have sent around to the group some resources from the International Ombudsman Association. I think it's, International Ombuds Association, resources on charters, and I hope we can kick off that discussion very shortly.
Great, thank you. Mathieu?
Yes, I think, sorry to interrupt, not wanting to stand between you and WHO's review, but I wanted to raise a point about coordination between Work Party 1 and Work Party 2. Becky has discussed the compact her group is working on, and I've noticed discussions within Work Party 1 related to the principles that are embedded into the affirmation of commitment. And my suggestion would be for the two rapporteurs to synchronize in order to avoid any duplication. I know Becky is also looking at this discussion in Work Party 1, but I think it should be made clear for all participants and members where this discussion about principle is actually taking place, and I think Work Party 2 is a good place right now. I know it's on the agenda for the upcoming Work Party 1 meeting, but I think that's an item that should be clarified in the next few days for everyone to have clarity about where discussions take place. Thank you.
Yes, we will certainly do that.
Great. Thanks for that reassurance. Becky, Cavus?
Yes, Thomas. I raised this question two times, but I have not received any answer yet. The ombudsman is okay today, but with the future arrangement that we have so many entities, like a standing committee for review, like the appeal board, I mean, is there really still a need to have a position like ombudsman? And if yes, there might be some conflict between the authorities or actions or activities of that with all those committees, the dress review, appeal board, and so on and so forth. This question that I raised has not been answered. I'm not against the existence of all. I've just raised the question. Do really, in future, we need this position? Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. Becky, would you like to respond to that?
I think that, you know, all of the independent review mechanisms are, you know, and all of the groups should be asking, you know, in light of sort of the totality of the picture here, does this continue to make sense? So I would expect that that question will be asked and answered in the course of the discussion, and that we probably shouldn't prejudge it going in. From my perspective, the existence of a variety, a number of groups and mechanisms doesn't diminish the need for somebody who is essentially can work to solve problems as they arise and before they become big problems, which is one of the functions of the ombudsman, I would think. But again, as I said, I'm not prejudging that. I think it's a reasonable question.
Thank you, Becky. Can we please go back to the WHOIS review quickly? And Steve, would you like to take that one on?
Sure, Thomas. Alice has reloaded Work Party 1's discussion of moving the Affirmation of Commitments reviews into the bylaws. The one on the screen at the very bottom, page 7 of 7, is item 4, which is the WHOIS review. And just to clarify, one of the stress tests identified that the Affirmation of Commitments could be canceled with 120 days notice. And since we were counting on the affirmation, including the reviews, to hold ICANN accountable to the community, it was a perception that we ought to find a way to make it permanent rather than something that was revocable by either party. It was an additional reason that came up even at the congressional hearing 2 weeks ago, this notion that after the IANA contract with NTIA is gone, there still would be one more bilateral and unique role for the U.S. government in a contracting role, and that would have been the Affirmation of Commitments. That certainly exposes it as yet another special role and bilateral relationship that would be under pressure. And so I think everybody recognized the desirability of moving these reviews into the bylaws. This last one on who is a bit troubling because all of us understand that two things. We understand that there's an effort underway to redesign the directory services. It's known as the Expert Working Group, or EWG. There is a consideration, though, that could be years from implementation. There's also the existing WHOIS system, and ICANN is committed to maintain its effectiveness and enforcement unless and until something replaces it. The Affirmation of Commitments review on WHOIS was last done 3 years ago. So believe it or not, it's already on the calendar for staff to take it up and to begin to pull together the review team assignments in 2015, later this year. So whether we act or not in this group, the Affirmation of Commitments requires that ICANN start another WHOIS review. The language on page 7, item 4, came pretty much from the Affirmation of Commitments. Didn't need to make any tweaks to this one. We did suggest that it's every 3 years, and that's exactly what the affirmation has in it now. In yellow, you'll see a line from two parties that were on our call last week, Robin Gross and Bruce Tonkin, both suggested in the chat, it wasn't extensively discussed, but that privacy principles, such as, for instance, the OECD, be added to the criterion of the review. And so we put that in there in yellow. If you'll note that the Affirmation of Commitments already suggests that there be representatives of law enforcement and experts on privacy. So the affirmation anticipated an expert on privacy participating, but it didn't articulate in specific words whose principles on privacy had to become part of the review criteria. So that's certainly open for discussion. The other elements here are things that we've already discussed with you, that Work Party 1 wants the community to designate the members, want to have access to internal documents with duties of confidence, and that, just like I discussed a little while ago, the output of the review team would be given to the board after, of course, public comment, and that the board would have 6 months to consider approval and to begin implementation. So happy to take a cue on any questions on the WHOIS review. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Chris. Is there any feedback from the group? So, Steve, obviously, this seems to be making a lot of sense to the colleagues on the call. So I think we should leave this with the group for the week and get back to it to ask whether there are any comments. But I think it's quite promising that we don't see any objection to that that suggestion at the moment. So I saw that Chris Lahati has kindly agreed to speak to the ombudsman question, and I think that we do have a few minutes for that before we move to the stress test. So, Chris, if you would like to make a to give some insight on that, please do. Chris, the floor is yours. Chris, maybe you are on mute. We can't hear you. Chris? There seems to be an audio issue, which is why I suggest that we... Chris, why don't you give us a signal if and when you're back on audio? Chris? Have you tried to speak? No, there seems to be an issue still. So with that, I think we can close this this agenda point and move to Mathieu for the stress test.
Thank you, Thomas. So the working body on stress tests is pretty amazing. There are 25 stress tests to complete, and I have to and the status is we have all the stress test templates filled in for consideration by us, and so we were confronted when discussing about today's agenda with the key problem of okay, which one do we want to address effectively during the call and prioritize this, but all the stress tests are for you to review now, thanks to amazing job by Cheryl, Steve, and the rest of the stress test working party. So what we'll discuss with Cheryl is to organize a bit. So I will turn to Cheryl for a general update, and then probably we will move to some of the stress tests, starting with the litigation and new regulations ones, number 3 and 4, so that we can have our regular discussion about these stress tests and the way to proceed with them. So, Cheryl, would you like to say a word first?
Thank you, Mathieu. I would. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. And yesterday's Thrillpact, an exciting adventure in the stress test world, will include a review under Steve's guidance with 3 and 4. But in a perfect world, with the time allocated, we'd also like to get to number 20. Just before we go to that, and I hand over to Steve, though, I did want to remind everybody that the Stress Test Working Party, whilst we've gone through, as Mathieu just said, all of these in a first read-through and a first run at least, recognising that, of course, nothing can be finalised until the work party 1 and 2 work is completed as well. But we have a teleconference meeting in about 28 hours' time, and I'll ask staff to put the exact UTC time into the chat, please, which, in addition to everybody in the Stress Test Working Party, any of you are also welcome to join us. It is the same Adobe Connect room as you're using now, and we will be going back to the beginnings and going through them all again with a little bit more rigour, but with a particular interest in having documentation ready for us to discuss as a committee of the whole when we're in the next face-to-face meeting in Istanbul, and also if we can to look at some of the crossover and interaction with stress tests that were proposed out of the CWG specific to IANA issues. So with that preamble, I've filibustered enough, I hope, for the most recent updated document to be up on your screens. And I'm not seeing it as individual scroll control, but perhaps that's just me, because you will need to scroll through for today. Over to you, Steve. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Cheryl. Steve Del Bianco here. To remind folks, the stress tests themselves can really only be applied once proposed mechanisms and structures for accountability are there to test with these particular stresses. However, we've all found some benefit out of running the stress test early against proposed or discussed accountability mechanisms and structures. It's helped to identify gaps, for instance, in the approaches that are being taken. And in some cases, it's really emphasized the importance of coming up with general purpose mechanisms that would actually address a number of stresses that we could face in the years ahead. I believe that Mathieu had wanted us to cover just a few of these, and with Cheryl's caveat, stress test team doesn't have a call until sometime in the next several hours when we will cover the same items. So I can give you a flavor for what we've come up with. If you scroll to page 5 of the 12 in the document there, you'll see two of the stress tests. Now, again, there are 25. 10 or so had come from the business constituency. Another 15 were gathered from the community over the course of December, January. So we have numbers 3 and 4 were very close together, and they got to the notion that either regulation or litigation would interfere with the existing policies or with the enforcement or development relating to ICANN's activities. And this threat would not be related directly to the transition of IANA stewardship. So we look at two columns here, the existing accountability measures and then proposed. In both existing and proposed, the nature of this threat is the notion of the management and board, under a lot of pressure from legitimate places, might acquiesce to, say, government or GAC demands. They might change policy or moderate the way they do enforcement in order to avoid a fragmented route under pressure from some governments, for instance, to avoid fines in the case of litigation or regulation, or under pressure to keep certain governments from leaving the GAC. That, in any world, whether it's post or pre-transition. But we evaluated that the community would not have any ability, any standing to challenge or veto a board and management decision to do the things that we just discussed. That led us to conclude the existing measures were inadequate. And again, a lot of this has to do with whether the community has standing. It's true that individuals have standing for IRPs, independent review panels, but their decisions aren't binding and the community doesn't have standing. A reconsideration only looks at process, not substance. So this really begs the question of needing stronger proposed accountability measures. So in that third column to the right, there are really three response options that have been discussed thus far, and they're all listed here. One is the notion that a supermajority would veto a board decision. And Jordan, I believe that is now in Work Party 1 to design the community veto. If I have that wrong, please let me know in the chat. As I've mentioned, reconsiderations or IRPs would probably need to give community, perhaps under supermajority, the standing for it to file one of these mechanisms, review and redress mechanisms. Now, the challenge there is it might still not be accessible to them if it has a high cost. If it costs $1 million to file an IRP, where does the community get that money? So we have to look at that, as well as what would be the standard of review. You see, a veto doesn't have a standard of review if a supermajority of community representatives veto a decision. However, an IRP or reconsideration has to look at written standards for making its decision of review. So I know that Becky's working on that now in Work Party 2. There's a third measure that would allow the community to force ICANN to implement a consensus policy or recommendation of an affirmation of commitment review. This first got discussed on the weekend in Singapore. The idea, it came before that. We covered it in Frankfurt when I believe Alan Greenberg was most forcefully arguing that it ought not just be decisions and actions that are reviewable, but also inaction. The question became, what kind of inaction? And we concluded that we could preserve the bottom-up, multi-stakeholder nature of decisions by suggesting that the community representatives could trigger ICANN to implement something like a consensus policy or a recommendation of an AOC review that had already been through the bottom-up consensus process. And so that's added as a third potential measure that would be available to the community if this stress test were to occur. And I think preliminarily we would say that these three measures together would be a significant improvement, but they might still be inadequate if ICANN were under sufficient pressure. So I'll stop there and see if there are any comments or questions on this particular stress test example.
I have Cavus in the queue. Please, Cavus.
Yes, with respect to the any type of majority, simple majority or super majority, I understand that you're dealing or referring to a group of people that are present and voting. Is that right? If that is right, I have the second question. Could you please, Steve, reply to that?
Hello, Cavus. On the last Work Party One call, you called for us to try to be more precise about whether supermajority was, say, two-thirds, three-quarters, or four-fifths, and I agree that that precision will definitely be necessary at some point. For the time being, I have been using the word supermajority, knowing that those particular mechanisms have not yet been defined by the work parties that are working on them. And I don't think it's based on the presence or a quorum at all. I believe what we're working towards is that the AC, the SO, and the SG representatives, the AG, AC, SO, and SG bodies, would be given sufficient time to respond on a decision that was brought forth, say, to veto a management move or some member of a given AC or SO. Suppose the GAC came up and said, we'd like to have a community invoke a reconsideration request on a decision. There would have to be a process where the other AC and SO and SG leaders would have the opportunity to review that and indicate their support or non-support. So I don't think it's a matter of gathering people in a room and counting heads or noses. I think it has to be a process that's documented, that's accountable, that's transparent, and gives each of the ACSO and SGs the time to reply. I hope that's responsive to your question.
Yes, thank you very much. You replied to my question indirectly. There is no need to have any presence or need to count on the quorum. This is a different process. Thank you very much for that.
Thank you to both of you. Sam, you're next. Go ahead.
Thanks. This is Samantha Eichner from ICANN. Steve, in the development of stress test 3 and 4, one thing that doesn't seem to be present here yet is the potential for the community to the way that it's written right now, I'm reading that there's a potential for the community to try to require ICANN to take action that would actually make it run afoul of laws. And so I was wondering how that fit in. It's often not just an issue of trying to avoid fees or trying to retain a government, but if there's actually legislation in place that if ICANN were to take certain actions, it would be in violation of or could have suits filed against it. If it wasn't, by an authority, but could have civil suits based on that, how do we balance this in terms of the stress test? I don't see that concept in here yet.
Sam, I could take a stab at that to suggest that the community, under a very high standard of supermajority, might well believe that ICANN should not acquiesce to a particular kind of pressure, or should not be so afraid of a lawsuit that it fails to enforce policies that the community had already adopted on a consensus basis in a bottom-up process. So I firmly believe that it's possible that the community, given the powers we're trying to impart here, could instruct ICANN to do something that perhaps ICANN legal counsel would feel was not in the best interest of the corporation. I think you should expect that that possibility could occur in the future.
Steve, I think that's touching an important point. And maybe to be more explicit, that relates to the stress test very directly. What you're saying, Steve, is that say the U.S. Congress comes up with legislation that is contrary to a certain policy within ICANN, and you are arguing that the community should have power to force ICANN to act contrary to this legislation. Is that right?
These are general. Yes, Matthew. These are general purpose community empowerment steps that are currently under discussion, and I'm unaware of any effort to constrain or restrict the community's power just because one nation might disagree with the implementation. In the same token that our U.S. Congress could go off the rails and do something that violates a lot of ICANN policies, it's also possible that a nation could adopt other measures that would really restrict free expression and violate the notion of a single root. It's going to happen. We're going to have pressure from different parts of the world for different reasons. And when we do, ICANN and management and board will do their best to make a decision they think is in the best interest of the corporation and the community, because they certainly consider both. But if the corporation makes a decision on the balance that the community strongly disagrees with, the answer is yes, we are designing mechanisms for the community to push back and tip that balance towards the community's will and perhaps against the advice of legal counsel at ICANN.
Okay, I think that's extremely important to underline, because that's going to be one of the key aspects of the stress test. Because what the current line of thinking I'm seeing from the group is this is a risk. It's already in place today. It's going to be in place post-transition. Underlying suggestion is to actually accept the risk and try and live with it, right?
Yeah, or to respond, or to increase our capability of giving the community the accountability and empowerment on how to answer that risk. Not all stress tests are solvable in the sense that you make the stress go away. Instead, many stress tests are simply an opportunity to give the community the voice it needs to decide how to react to the stress. Today, the community has no voice to question the corporation's decision in regard to one of these stresses or pressures. The proposal is three mechanisms by which the community would get a voice.
Okay, so it's a risk we have today, but at least we would enable the community to have the final words. Samantha, is that an old hand? Okay, I have Jordan and then Cavus. Jordan.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to just draw attention to the fact that there's a series of mechanisms or powers suggested here. If there was an issue that got dealt with by the community to veto a board decision, then the follow-up from that is presumably that the board would consider the issue and make another proposal. And if the community vetoed that as well, then the board would be thinking pretty seriously about it. And then in the end, if the community didn't like what the board was doing, it could roll the whole board. So, yeah, then the thresholds, presumably, for the two things, for disagreeing with the decision of the board and recommitting it versus removing the board, sit at different levels. So we have to consider the whole system in mind. And I think that while we can't ever guarantee to control the power of a state where ICANN, the organization, is resident, there is a pretty broad array of powers that we're proposing for the community here that will help. That's all.
Thanks, Jordan. Camus?
Yes, the course of action explained or envisaged by your scheme, does it have any conflict with the article of incorporation? Because we're dealing with the ICANN, United States Senate or Congress, and the community, so would have some impact on that. Would not be in conflict on the article of incorporation if it is still remain the same? It's reading of the version of the 21 November 1998, or what are the other actions of that?
Thanks, Kavus. I think we were actually underlining how much of a conflict, a complex situation that would lead to. And that's certainly the case. Bruce, you are next.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just on mute. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I guess... I noticed Steve is using the term against legal counsel advice, because I guess there's different scenarios. But one scenario is where the board takes action, presumably because a law is created somewhere, and we're informed of that law by the relevant GAC representative. And I guess we get legal counsel advice to say whether or not ICANN believes it falls under that law, but ultimately the relevant government could actually take action through a law enforcement agency, which is a little bit different than just receiving advice. But I think there's a difference between the board taking action on a piece of advice it receives from a government versus the board taking action that's in breach of a policy. So I think fundamentally we have policies coming from the ICANN community. The board approves those policies. And under its bylaws, it needs to adhere to those policies. You can't just arbitrarily make its own decisions there. One of the mechanisms the community does have in the case of some new law being created is for the community to create a policy around that law, and that would come through the policy development process. So I just want to kind of separate an issue between the board taking action in response to notifying or being notified by a government of a particular law versus the board taking action in breach of a policy, because I think those are quite different things. And the community also has the ability to create policies in response to new laws that get created as well.
Bruce, it's Steve. I think I could add in the proposed accountability column and the existing, I could add that one response is the community could, from the bottom up in a consensus way, create a new policy in response. I still think that doesn't change the conclusion that the community is unable to override a decision of the board. And you said in the chat that the community could do an IRP or a reconsideration, but I believe you clarified for all of us when we were together in Frankfurt that the community doesn't have any standing to do a reconsideration or an IRP. The reconsideration is process and not substance, and finally the IRP is not binding upon ICANN. It's one of the reasons we're doing the work at designing and improving those mechanisms to make them accessible to the community at large.
Yeah, and I accept those changes are necessary. I'm just trying to sort of separate some separate mechanism versus it sounds to me like you're trying to create some improved operation of the IRP and reconsideration to allow the community, etc., to respond. I'm just wary of a completely separate process that just deals with this case versus a process that deals with the situation where the board's not following a community policy. I think they're a little bit different.
Well, there are several stress tests that touch the same one. And think about it. If one nation passed a law that says that ICANN may not publish a route that includes a TLD, a GTLD that contains domains that are critical of that government's policies. Of course, they can block it through an ISP, but a law that got passed in that way is a law that might be binding upon ICANN, but that ICANN may choose not to follow, knowing that that government can change the route through its ISPs, and it doesn't, maybe ICANN wants to stand for free expression and not change the route that the rest of the world overseas. I bring up that example since I think it answers the red meat example of many folks who are worried that this transition would endanger free expression. And I believe the stress test can help to get to the core of it, that it doesn't make ICANN susceptible to pressure to eliminate free expression, that if the community deems that ICANN should maintain the values that it has, that it could override a board that was under a lot of pressure from lawsuits or regulation and legislation.
Thank you. Is that an old hand? Bruce, I think that's your current hand.
I'll take it down. Sorry, yeah.
Okay. Tavus, the last word, then we'll move to the next stress test.
Yes, I have some concerns that we are making a national law subordinate to something else. I don't understand that. In turning into the area that it is not, is outside our mandate, talking that a national law should be subordinated to a decision or a law of anyone else. There are very, very critical and so on and so forth. Even the ICANN, which is not international law, there is a provision of dealing with the national law with respect to any international law, law of Treaty Vienna 1965. I don't think that we should get into this matter. I don't understand this question at all, that a government makes something and I don't know what is the essence behind this test. What we are going to say, that you're tying up the hand of a particular government that he cannot do anything according to its own constitution because it is an ICANN law or bylaws?
Thanks, Kavus. I think that's the key question that's being raised by this stress test is that might place... there can be contradictions between national legal regimes in various countries, and ICANN can be right in the middle of that. And that's certainly something that is way beyond our mandate, but that we should consider in terms of stress testing. And I think we have a pretty fair assessment right now that we don't know how to solve this, and it's not clear that we should know. But certainly it's useful to be aware of this potential issue before we go out for public comment. We're probably currently not solving this and probably won't be, but it's a key risk for ICANN, as any global organization, to find itself in contradiction with some national laws.
And Matthew, it's Steve. Keep in mind that this test, the exercise is not to eliminate the risk. It's not possible. It's to ask the question whether existing versus proposed accountability measures give the community empowerment to hold board and management accountable in how it reacts to that stress.
Okay, so I think three and four are really important. We'll certainly have to come back to them later on, and since there are contingencies we are not in a position to mitigate at this point, we'll certainly have to report on this. And so certainly there will be discussed further down in a few weeks before we go for public comments. I think it was important that we discuss them. Can I suggest we move to number 20, Steve? Number 20 is about blocking a delegation of a new TLD through a court decision.
20 is on page 6 of the document that Alice has in the chat. Number 20 was a business constituency stress test. It's very similar to the one we have just covered. It's a notion that courts get involved at blocking a particular delegation of a new GTLD, and it could be a complaint from existing operators or other aggrieved parties, and the consequence there would be ICANN is sort of faced with a decision whether to honor a court order, even though doing so could bring liability, fines, perhaps even injunctions upon ICANN. It's not related to the IANA stewardship. In many respects, it was related to the mess made of string similarity, independent reviews, in particular singulars and plurals, but people are aware of others that are just as troubling. So the question here is, how does the community empowered to influence the ICANN management and board's decision on how to react to this particular contingency, this particular stress test of a court? The community has no standing, or had no standing, in the new GTLD program to object to strings. Only applicants and existing TLDs did. So that meant the entire community of registrants and users had zero standing to file an objection on string similarity, that they thought plurals were going to be confusing or not. The reconsideration requests, in general, they only look at process and not at substance, and the community does not have a standing there. So in this particular case, if ICANN board discarded policy in order to respond to a court order, the community would really have no standing or a way to challenge or veto that decision. So under the proposed measures, the three under remedial are pretty similar to what we covered earlier. But there's a preventative one, which is in many respects, it's like what Bruce Tonkin mentioned on stress test numbers 3 and 4, the notion that during policy development, the community has the opportunity to challenge management board decisions about policy and implementation during the policy development process. And as Bruce said, in reaction to something like this, the community, if it could move quickly enough, we possibly could develop new policy and have it bubble up in time to answer the challenge. But all of us understand that when we cook up a new policy, it usually takes quite long for the community to do that through the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process. So since the remedial measures are very similar to what we just covered, I can stop there and see if there's any comments and questions on number 20.
Any comments? Caruso.
Yes, thank you very much, and I sincerely apologize. Steve, you talk too fast. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Caboose. I'm aware of the late hour. I will certainly slow down. Thank you.
Okay, so number 20 is another one where we have an improvement, the still no elimination of the risk, which is another instance of where that involves actually legal and legislative actions. So I think this whole category of stress tests, we might find ourselves in these positions. I see no other comments so far. Cheryl or Steve, which ones would be, not to address them now, but which ones would be the stress tests we would be probably discussing next week?
One and two.
1 and 2 would be the operational ones, right?
Yep.
Well, we have a call in less than 24 hours, so the stress test work party. My guess is give us an opportunity to go through them, and maybe we'll come up with some suggestions for our next call.
But we certainly have suggested we'll look at 1 and 2 in terms of operational next week.
Can I suggest that after your call, maybe you share with the whole CCWG which stress tests you think will be the more valuable to discuss during the call next Tuesday, so everyone can prepare and review them?
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve. Thank you, Matteo.
Thanks. All right. And once again, it's great to have this stress test. I think this they bring a lot of value and showing what we are about to enhance as well as the remaining areas of risk. And with that, I would like to turn to Leon for the legal group update. Leon?
Thanks, Matthew, very much. Well, as we can see, One of the issues we're discussing is all about legal advice. So with regards to the legal sub-team work, we've held one call last week, and we went through the document with the different participants of the legal sub-team, and we reviewed and incorporated some of the concerns that were raised in our past call of this group. And as much as we wanted to shorten the document, I think we didn't achieve that goal so far, but we are definitely refining the language and refining the questions that so far we have built into the document. And I'd like to remind both Working Party 1, Working Party 2, to come up with their own questions in order to be incorporated into the legal scoping document. This is, of course, as we've seen with the stress test part as well, a very important part of the work that needs to be considered and taken in front of the lawyers for advice. So I would urge the rapporteurs to please come with those legal questions so we can incorporate them into the legal scoping document. One of the questions that was widely discussed in our last call was had to do with the jurisdiction issue. And while we all agreed that having a look into advice on whether jurisdiction or how jurisdiction should be addressed and how the concerns of the different stakeholders should be addressed, we also agreed that this would be an issue that must be addressed within Workstream 2. And the reason for this is that if we look at this jurisdiction issue at Workstream 1, we could be facing the derailing of the whole process of the transition. So it was an agreement reached by the legal sub-team, and of course it would be put in front of the larger group, starting with this call and of course with a wider discussion in the list, maybe if it needs to take place, that this issue will need to be addressed in Workstream 2. Another issue that I need to update you about the legal sub-team is that, as you saw on the list, I circulated the message from Jonathan Robinson, who advised us that the CWG has engaged with a certain law firm. And I would remind you to kindly mute your microphones if you're not speaking. He made the announcement that the CWG has engaged with a law firm to provide advice to the CWG. So far, the CCWG hasn't engaged with any law firm. As of today, we are going to hold a call with one of the shortlisted law firms tomorrow. The legal sub-team is going to hold that call. And, well, of course, we're still considering which, as Bruce pointed out in the chat, the initial intention of the legal sub-team would be to use the same law firm as the CWG. But since we haven't had the chance to go through this call with the appointed law firm, we haven't been able to decide yet if this is the way we're going to go. So, of course, the possibility of engaging with the same law firm is important. I mean, it's high. It's a high possibility that we will engage with the same law firm, but we surely need to go through our own process as well, in order to define if this is the legal law firm we will be looking at. I would now like to open the floor for any comments or questions you might have on this update. I see Jorge Cancio has a question. It says, will you put this question on jurisdiction explicitly to the CCWG list? Yes, the document has been circulated. if you mean that if I will formulate the question on whether jurisdiction should be a matter of Workstream 1 and Workstream 2, I wouldn't ask the question as it is. I would inform the group that the agreement by the legal subteam is that it should be a matter of Workstream 2 rather than Workstream 1, and of course call for comments or suggestions on that agreement reached by the legal subteam. I don't know if that answers your question, Jorge, and of course the floor is still open for more questions and suggestions. I don't see anyone raising their hand, or yes. Is it? Oh yes, I'm sorry. I was wrong. I see Caboose hand is up. Then we have Sebastian Bachelet and Steve Del Bianco. So please, Caboose, could you take the floor?
Yes, very short. I don't think we should spend too much time on the selection or designation of the law firm. The CCWG has some, and look at that one. It's okay, take it. Not spending months to see which one is the better result. I think they have some experience and would be beneficial that if we have quick something being quickly done and they start to do work. And just I remind myself and yourself, Leon, that sometime I ask that would it be possible that we have some explanation about the limitation, restriction of the California law, and you promised that at some time there would be some documentation to explain to us what are the difficulties, problems of that California law with respect to what we are doing. And I hope that you have it still on your agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Caboose. Well, point taken. And yes, we are also incorporating some questions with regards to California law in the scoping document. So, of course, you can review that document. I will circulate again the link to the Google Doc in which Robin Gross kindly has put a lot of effort into improving the initial document. And, well, of course, this document is also open to comments to the larger group. And now I would like to pass the floor along to Sebastian Bachelet. Sebastian, please take the floor.
Thank you very much, Leon Sebastian Bachelet. I saw that there were good reasons why the CWG chose this law firm, and I would like to suggest that you go first to this one if you don't have really very good reason not to choose them to go with them. I think it will simplify all the work of this transition, because if not, we will have to find a third one to communicate between the two law firms who will choose between the CWG and the CCWG. It's a joke, but you will have a lot of coordination to do, and that may be not the best way to go for the organization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. While I agree with your views that we should be making this as simple as possible, there's also the concern from the legal subteam, as Edward Morris pointed out in the chat already, that while this firm seems to have the right skills and expertise we're looking for, we definitely need to have a direct call with them in order to double check on whether they meet the needs of the CCWG as well as the CWG, and chances are that they will, but we still need to go through that process of verifying the skill set and availability for ourselves. So we're one call away from confirming or looking at other options. Let's have this call tomorrow, and of course we will come back to the rest of the group as to inform what is the outcome of that call. I see Steve Dolbianco's hand is up. Steve, please take the floor.
Thank you, Leon. I'm happy to defer to this group's judgment about the right firm and whether it's the same firm. But something you said earlier has broader implications, and it's the question of which areas of inquiry will be in work stream one and work stream two. And I heard you say that you were worried about derailing the IANA transition. And, you know, I do think that once the legal firm is selected and the excellent questions have been put to them, only after their answers come back should the entire CCWG have an opportunity of understanding which things are so complex that they might have to go to work stream two and which are essential community powers that have to be in work stream one. So I don't want to bias any of that. Let's wait and see what we can do and what we must do in work stream one, because one sure way to derail the transition is to try to get this community behind a proposal that really doesn't give us the kind of powers we need to implement the rest of work stream two. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. We will definitely consider what you're saying. And, Jess, we will put the questions in front of the law firm that finally engages with the CCWG, wait for some replies, and, of course, we will subject these replies to the larger community in order to prioritize the needs of the CCWG. Is there anyone else that is willing to make any comments or suggestions? I'm mindful of the time. We're almost reaching the top of the hour, and we'll still need to address a couple of points in our agenda today. So if there are no further questions, I would like to hand it back to Matthew and Barry to go ahead with the agenda point number three, the timeline. So please, Matthew.
Thank you, Leon. Unfortunately, Barry has apologized for this meeting. I think he's a bit sick now. So what I'd like to focus on, rather than an update on the timeline that hasn't really changed, is ensure we have a common understanding of what to expect from our Istanbul meeting. The first thing I want to stress, and it was mentioned last week already, is that we don't have an agenda yet, and that's because we think the most effective way to proceed in this meeting will be to base our agenda on the actual issues coming up from the working parties and the questions that we have to discuss, find consensus on, etc., in order to come out of Istanbul with a common understanding of what will go in the public comment that we are due to launch 10 days after Istanbul. And so the expectations we have before Istanbul is that our hope is that we can provide to the whole CCWG the inputs from the various working parties a few days before, at least before the weekend, so everyone can have some reading on the planes. We hope that most of the main concepts and ideas can be socialized on the mailing list or in the calls before, so that we are at least a little bit familiarized with them before we get to the debate in Istanbul. And the main aspects we are expecting to discuss are the draft compact. It was already introduced today, and that's a very good step forward. The AOC discussion about what should be included in the bylaws and how. Of course, the community empowerment workstream one measures, the review redress workstream one measures as well, and certainly we might also have to discuss the complete set of stress tests if there's anything remaining. The idea being that with that we would be able to come out with general directions in common understanding about what we call for public comment on. We are aware that we might not have the legal advice back in time for that. And certainly our option right now is to is to work on the basis of the initial legal feedback we've had, either from within the group or from the past interactions with Jonas Day, and of course keeping open any question that would raise legal doubts. To Robin's point on the chat, that's a risk we're taking. We're aware of that, but I think we don't have any other option. And we can't rule out to have an initial legal advice, and that would be very very positive, obviously. But I think I can't see any alternative right now. Jordan, you have a comment. Your hand is raised. Jordan, are you on mute?
Hi, Matthew. Yeah, sorry, I was not even connected on my audio. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thanks. Look, I've been looking at this timetable and getting steadily more anxious about it. I think one of the reasons for that is maybe we just need to be really careful about aligning our expectations as a group about what our final output needs to be, the one that we send to the ICANN board in June according to the current schedule, which is in front of us, and what we're going to get public comment on in April. So if we don't have to have I struggle to see how we can get enough done in time for our public consultation in April to have fully closed out our in time for the schedule that's there. I think that we're going to talk about the structure of the public comment report in a minute, but I'm basically agreeing in a different way with Robin. I think that by the end of the Istanbul meeting, we will know whether the issues in the group are close to resolution. And that should be a good proxy for what's going to happen in the ICANN community as a whole. So if we feel like we're in good shape and that there isn't a lot of controversy about what's going on, and we can prepare enough detail so that this stands as the only public comment period, then that's fine. But I think we have to start entertaining the possibility that we're not going to get to that point, or that the public comments come back require a bigger rethink. And I think that my personal view is that that's okay. If we ended up finalizing our a second draft of our proposal for public comment later, we could do that. But that's just what I wanted to say now.
Thanks, Jordan. This is certainly an item for our discussions in Istanbul, whether we feel we're ready or not. But I think most of the discussion here is about the level of detail we would have to achieve before going into a public comment. And that's certainly going to be a key discussion. But as mentioned earlier regarding the affirmation of commitment discussion, I don't think there is any reasonable expectation for us to provide fully detailed writings of bylaw changes, for instance. Currently, our recommendation should be on the requirement and principles level. And I think we still have a good chance of achieving that, considering the progress that's being made right now. I have Kavus on the line. Kavus, please.
Question, how much time do you put for the public comment period? How many days?
It's currently 30 days.
30 days, okay. Good, thank you. That's okay.
Okay, so what I take from this discussion is obviously the importance that in Istanbul we have a discussion whether or not we feel we need to update the timeline or not. But I think until Istanbul, I'd rather focus our efforts at getting as much detailed, concrete proposals on the table, discussing them, assessing our level of agreement on that, and rather than discuss right now how we would extend any timelines or delays or anything. So that would be the approach we would favor, so that, as Jordan is saying, we run full speed ahead. As co-chairs, we're very aware of these challenges and really looking at potential backup solutions and everything. But I think what's important is focus our work, focus on requirements, and not go too much into details. Otherwise, we will derail the timeline, and I think we would go further than expected, and probably run the risk of derailing the process. So, and of course, as Jordan is saying, yes, the issues to discuss will be settled a little bit late next week once we have the incoming inputs from the various groups. But for instance, it's clear the compact will be on our agenda, and it's been socialized and circulated already. It's going to evolve, be discussed next week, and that's going to be helpful to shape the agenda for Istanbul. Jordan, you want to add another word?
No, sorry, I had my my old hand up. I'll writing some comments in the chat for people to look at.
So action item for the co-chairs is to include in the Istanbul agenda an item regarding the next steps for the group and the timeline for the rest of the group, at probably in the last section of the Istanbul agenda. With that, we are coming close to the top of the hour. Thomas, would you like to take over for the next point?
Yes, I can. It's, the idea is just to give you a very quick outline of the report that we will have to submit for public comment. And we are currently working, or we've been working on a structure of the report. And I, you know, this is just to share this initial thinking with you and get some instant feedback. So basically, the report is going to have a management abstract, which obviously we can't write before we know what the recommendations of the group will be. Then, you know, and this is pretty much standard for all types of policy-related documents. We're going to have a section introducing the work and providing some background information, you know, on the announcement of the U.S. government and so on and so forth. And we're going to talk about methodology. This is basically a description of what we previously did. You will remember that we had four sub-teams working on various areas, and then moved to the next level, and now we're yet at another stage. So this is going to be described in that section as we propose. Then you will find, or our suggestion is that we will have the definitions and scoping document that Mathieu and others have been working on incorporated into the report. We will have the inventory of the existing accountability mechanisms. And this is basically where you find feedback from the original work area one. We would have the input gathered from the community. That's what came out of work area number two. We will have a description of the contentions. And that's basically what's been done by work area four and the stress test working party. And then we will have the accountability mechanisms as recommended by this group. And we will have different subtopics there, which firstly is the architecture of the accountability mechanisms. You know, that would be sort of the index of our accountability mechanism cookbook, if you wish, and then we're going to have the recipes of non-triggered mechanisms as well as triggered mechanisms. And this is what's currently been worked on by work party number one and work party number two. These will then be stress tested. The outcome of the stress test will be based on work area four and the stress test working party, which is going to make the eighth chapter of the book, And then there will be the implementation plan, including the timing. You will remember that the US government has made clear that everything not only needs to be stress tested, but also there needs to be a clear vision on how the implementation is going to go about. And also this is relevant for work stream number one, because not everything can be done prior to the transition, but certain items will be committed to, and so the implementation plan needs to be built into our project. So that's basically it. I think you don't have to respond right now, but you certainly can. We are now starting the work on putting or populating these topics with content. We have quite a lot of substance already, because this working group has been working very hard producing work. But this is basically what we could come up with and present to the community. Jordan, I'm not sure whether that's an old hand or a new hand, but if it's a new hand, please fire away.
It's a new one. My only point I want to make is that we've got to be mindful that in April, in theory, we'll be asking the community comment on these accountability recommendations, and at the same time the community is going to be dealing with the names proposal. And so I think we need to structure this report in a way that if people only have half an hour and have only got the headspace to answer four or five key questions, that they can do that. So I think thinking about the structure of this, what goes in appendices and so on, and just having a really tight write-up of the key recommendations and how it fits together is really, 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 really important, much more than usual. Thanks.
Yes. I think there are two things, one of which is the report, which we have to put out for public comment, and then as an additional layer, I think we need to think of ways how to best get feedback from the community, and we can do that in different ways to exactly address the concern that you had. I think we should leave it there. We are 4 minutes past the top of the hour, so you've all been very generous with your time, and with that, I'd like to hand it over to Leon for the next agenda items.
Thank you very much, Thomas. So the next agenda item is any other business. So if anyone has any other business to put on the table for this call, I would like you to come forward. I see Jordan hand is up, but I assume that's an all hand. Jordan, could you please? Yes, thank you. So I see no one bringing any other business into this call, and I will like to thank everyone for their time, and I'm mindful that it's really late for some of us already, and we have a lot of work ahead, and we'll update you as soon as we have an outcome from our call with the law firm tomorrow. And thank you very much again, and talk to you soon. This call is now adjourned.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.